2 a.m. Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. So, one of my favorite pastimes in the entire world is walking into a place full of books, picking out all of the books that look even mildly interesting to me, and going home with them. In a bookstore that is a financially ruinous and just irresponsible thing to do, since I don't even know if I'll like books I've never read. In a library, however, it is both free, well, kind of basically free, and also responsible, since I don't have to keep the books after I'm done reading them, and my bookshelves are grateful for that. Recently, I went to the library and picked up 5 random books that I have been wanting to read, and I thought it could be fun to do an experiment, a book experiment, a book haul experiment to test how well I actually know my own reading tastes. Specifically, here's the question we are trying to address today. Can I predict in advance what my ranking will be for these 5 books? Which book will be my favorite, which book will be my least favorite, and which ones will end up somewhere in between? Will my predicted rankings from 1 to 5 be accurate, somewhat accurate, or will I accidentally reveal that when it comes to reading, I actually have no idea what I'm doing? Let's find out. So, the 5 books I got from the library in my little library book haul are 1, Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, 2, The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry, 3, The Devil and the Dark Water by Stuart Turton, and finally, 2 of Agatha Christie's classic Hercule Poirot detective novels, Third Girl and Dumb Witness. By the way, dumb in that last case doesn't mean stupid, it just means unable to speak. Here are my predicted rankings for these 5 books, and I will go from predicted least favorite, number 5, to predicted most favorite, number 1. Going in the number 5 and 4 spots are the 2 Agatha Christie books, Third Girl and Dumb Witness. I have been reading through all of the Poirot mystery books since last year. It's been kind of my own personal reading journey, reading marathon, and don't get me wrong here, I tend to really enjoy these books. Obviously, they're classics, they're classic mysteries, right? Like 2 of my favorite things. But 1, I cannot deny that some of the Poirot books have been kind of boring or just like not very good. And 2, the themes can be interesting and the plot twists are always fun, but by and large, the characters in these stories are cardboard. They're only there to advance the story forward, and none of the Poirot or like Agatha Christie books I've read have ever qualified as the best books ever, at least in my own personal experience, right? They're fun and enjoyable, and the mysteries are generally clever, and sometimes I solve them in advance, and that's really fun, but compared to the other books in this book haul, I think Third Girl and Dumb Witness will just have to end up at the bottom of the list. Now, I don't know what they're about since I never read the blurbs for mystery books to avoid spoilers, but Dumb Witness has a dog on the cover, so I will put that one at number 4 and Third Girl at number 5. Moving on to spot number 3, I am putting Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. I read her other book, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, last year, and that book is basically a historical fantasy novel about the British using magic to win the Napoleonic Wars, and I loved it. It truly spoke to my classics loving heart. I actually own a physical copy of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which is the highest praise I can bestow on any book. Well, I did buy it used for $1, so, you know, it's not like I spent a great deal of money, but it's still taking up space on my bookshelves. An honor and a privilege. I think that on a technical level, I will really enjoy Piranesi, but I do happen to know that there is a huge plot twist in this book that changes your entire perception of what you thought it was about, and I'm just not sure how I will feel about the book after the plot twist. Sometimes those types of huge plot twist stories blow my mind in the best possible way, and sometimes I kind of wish the plot twist never happened. I'm just not sure how I'll feel about it, so Piranesi goes in the number 3 spot, even though I love Susanna Clarke's previous book, so I am fully prepared for this prediction to be completely wrong. Going in the number 2 spot is The Devil in the Dark Water by Stuart Turton. I love his previous book, The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, so much. It is truly one of my favorite out-of-the-box mystery books, and I know that The Devil in the Dark Water is a historical mystery, which sounds right up my alley. I love a historical setting. I trust Stuart Turton to write a compelling mystery, and I think I'll just really enjoy it. So The Devil in the Dark Water gets the honor of the number 2 spot. And then finally, in the predicted number 1 spot, I am putting The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. I am predicting that my favorite book out of these 5 books will be a book that I know nothing about and I have never even read from this author before, but I'm predicting that this will be my number 1 pick. I know that The Essex Serpent has gotten great reviews, it's historical fantasy, and in the blurb, themes are very prominent. So I'm going to take a massive gamble and predict that The Essex Serpent will be my new favorite book. Like my ranking for Piranesi, I'm completely prepared for this prediction to be wrong, but hey, what's life if you're not taking a few risks? Okay, so let's go over my predicted rankings one more time. 1, The Essex Serpent. 2, The Devil in the Dark Water. 3, Piranesi. Number 4, Dumb Witness. And then finally, number 5, Third Girl. And now, let's find out how good or bad I am at predicting my own reading taste. Let's do this! All right, I am back after having read all 5 books, and I hope you enjoyed our little musical interlude. That was the Berceuse from The Dolly Suite by the 20th century French composer Gabriel Fauré. In that case, it was obviously transcribed for solo piano, and the recording was by Brian M. Jones. If you'd like to listen to the full performance, I just pulled a Wikimedia audio file, which is linked in the description. And personally, I would definitely encourage you to look up the original Dolly Suite in its full orchestral form, since it is a beautiful piece of music, one of my personal favorites, and it is also inspired by a real-life love triangle involving the composer Fauré, his mistress, and another 20th century French composer, Claude Debussy. Some juicy historical gossip that also gave us a lot of beautiful music, so I'd like to say that it's a win-win all around. And now, let's get on with my final rankings for these five books, from least favorite to most favorite. In the number five spot, the least favorite spot, I predicted that my least favorite out of these five books would be the Hercule Poirot mystery, Third Girl by Agatha Christie. And having read all five books, I am putting, drumroll please, Third Girl in the number five spot, which is honestly impressive on my part, since it truly was a coin flip between these two Poirot books. Third Girl opens with this random girl running into Poirot's house, saying that she thinks she might have committed a murder, and then she runs away again. Poirot, our iconic detective, is confused, obviously, but he also knows a compelling puzzle when it interrupts his very balanced breakfast of hot chocolate and brioche. Truly, a man after my own heart. And so he sets out on a journey to find out who this mysterious girl is, why no one seems to know where she's gone to, and most importantly, why she thinks she might have committed a murder. Third Girl was the 10th Poirot book I've read, a milestone on my journey to reading all 39 Poirot books. And since I have been reading these books completely out of series order, I've noticed that the later books in the Poirot series seem to be much more lighthearted, I guess, than the earlier books. I mean, not that the earlier Poirot books are exactly super serious or dark or anything like that, but they're definitely not infused with the same humorous energy that the later books are, and the humor was definitely a highlight of reading Third Girl. I had a lot of fun with this mystery. It had plenty of twists and turns, and structurally, you can definitely tell that this is the work of an expert mystery writer at the top of her game. But after finishing Third Girl and thinking through my reading experience a little more objectively, Third Girl is well plotted, definitely. But for a series that places so much emphasis on the psychology of crime and of murder in particular, the psychological themes of this book weren't compelling in the same way that they have been in other Poirot books I've read. And also, frankly, it felt like we were retreading similar ground that we already covered in The ABC Murders, which is an earlier Poirot book. So, while I really enjoyed reading Third Girl, It's also probably the most forgettable out of these five books. And as I predicted, I am putting Third Girl by Agatha Christie in my least favorite spot, the number five spot. Moving on to spot number four, my second least favorite out of these five books, I predicted that I would be placing Dumb Witness by Agatha Christie in this spot, and surprise, I was again correct. Dumb Witness is about the murder of a very rich old lady with a whole host of relatives and servants who all had a motive to kill her because, again, she was very rich. I originally ranked Dumb Witness above Third Girl in my predictions segment because Dumb Witness had a dog on the cover. And after reading the book, I can indeed confirm that the dog is very important to the plot. Dumb Witness is actually dedicated to Agatha Christie's dog. To dear Peter, most faithful of friends and dearest of companions, a dog in a thousand, which is very sweet. It's one of the sweetest dedications I've read in a while, and I think more authors should dedicate books to their pets. What's really fun about Dumb Witness is that not only is the dog character, Bob the Terrier, constantly showing up, but we also get anthropomorphized insights into his character, and these insights are clearly coming from someone who loves and understands dogs. As, for example, in this scene where Poirot and his faithful companion Hastings, who basically is the Dr. Watson to the Sherlock Holmes. And in this scene, Poirot and Hastings are visiting the rich old lady's home for the first time. As we were staring at it, a dog's bark attracted my attention. The bushes were thin at that point, and the dog could easily be seen. He was a wire-haired terrier, somewhat shaggy as to coat. His feet were planted wide apart, slightly to one side, and he barked with an obvious enjoyment of his own performance that showed him to be actuated by the most amiable of motives. "Good watchdog, aren't I?" he seemed to be saying. "Don't mind me, this is just my fun. My duty too, of course. Just have to let him know there's a dog about the place. Deadly dull morning. Quite a blessing to have something to do. Coming into our place? Hope so. It's darn dull. I could do with a little conversation." "Hello, old man," I said, and shoved forward a fist. Craning his neck through the railings, he sniffed suspiciously, then gently wagged his tail, uttering a few short staccato barks. "Not been properly introduced, of course. Have to keep this up. But I see you know the proper advances to make." "Good old boy," I said. "Woof," said the terrier, amiably. Bob is adorable, and he's easily the highlight of this book, Dumb Witness. The actual mystery is pretty straightforward. Definitely much more straightforward than a twisty, complex mystery like Third Girl. And more importantly, I feel like people, and by people, I mean potential readers, should be aware that Dumb Witness contains a racial slur that is probably the poster child of racial slurs. And this book is not even subtle about it because it is literally in one of the chapter titles and is also used twice, I believe, in that chapter. This has happened to me before with another Poirot book, the same surprise racial slur. And I understand, obviously, that this is a book from the 1930s, but the nauseating dissonance between this charming and quaint cozy mystery and its choice of language did really throw me off while I was reading it. For this reason alone, Dumb Witness almost ended up at the bottom of my ranking in the number 5 spot, but I did really love Bob the Terrier. He really elevated my reading experience, and I did enjoy the book overall more than I enjoyed Third Girl, so Dumb Witness does still go in the 4th place, but honestly, it was touch and go there for a minute. Moving on to 3rd place, I originally put Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, but even when I was making that prediction, I admitted that I might be completely wrong in putting Piranesi so low in my predicted rankings, considering that I loved her other book, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Noel, and lo and behold, I was indeed wrong, because going in 3rd place is not Piranesi, but instead The Devil and the Dark Water by Stuart Turton. The Devil and the Dark Water is, like I said in my prediction segment, a historical mystery, although the historical setting is more set dressing, as the author admits in his afterword, which is entitled An Apology to History and Boats. I'd like to also add that while this book is definitely a mystery, it reads more like an epic sea adventure. The Devil in the Dark Water takes place on a very large ship filled with violent sailors, nasty aristocrats, and some very unfortunate ordinary passengers. Over the course of the voyage, everyone on board slowly becomes convinced that they are being haunted by a devil named Old Tom. And given the volatile mixture of people on board, chaos ensues, blood flows, and it quickly becomes this immersive reading experience where you're flying through the pages wondering what is going to happen next. I'd like to have on record that I am very proud of myself for figuring out the culprit around the 51% mark, because wow, there were so many characters and there was so much going on, but thanks to my brain picking up on a strange but very intentional discrepancy, I figured it out anyway. The Devil in the Dark Water was a lot of fun to read, I'll admit, and it shares a lot of the strengths that I remember from Stuart Turton's previous book, The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. Both books have meticulous plotting, clues that invite the reader to play along and then reward the reader for doing so, and a claustrophobic, immersive atmosphere that pulls you in and refuses to let you go until you finish the book. But I am still putting The Devil and the Dark Water in the number 3 spot, not in the predicted number 2 spot, because one, it just doesn't have the same it factor that The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle did. Two, with superstition and fear being such prominent themes in this book, I wanted to be more chilled, more scared, but personally, I really wasn't at any point, because it just felt like a case of very human machinations and deviltry to me, I guess. And three, finally, this is one of those mystery books that I just can't see myself ever wanting to reread, and maybe that just wasn't what I was expecting from this author. I'm still planning to read his new book that's coming out in May, The Last Murder at the End of the World, very traumatic title. And I think The Devil and the Dark Water was probably just a case of the dreaded second book that is the bane of both authors and readers alike. Also, I think this book may have been rushed because I found several typos in the print edition, the physical hardback edition of this book. In case someone from Sourcebooks, the publisher, is tuning in, I'll just run through them really quickly because these are sloppy errors that really, really stood out to me as I was reading. On page 71, Arendt says, "What this?" instead of "What's this?" On page 96, in the sentence, "Whatever favor old Tom asked of this Bosie, its only end would have been suffering." The wrong "it" is used, which is so sloppy. On page 286, it says, "Chamberlain Voss followed at his master's heel once again." But I believe the expression is "followed at his master's heels," plural. And finally, on page 425, it says, "Drecht considered it, but nodded, happy to have Arendt on side." Which should obviously be happy to have Arendt on his side. And please note that I picked up on all of these typos in a single read through where I wasn't even looking for them, which is a bit ridiculous for a traditionally published book, as I hope you'll all agree. And I just hope that Sourcebooks did a slightly more thorough copy editing job for his upcoming release. Moving on to spot number two, my second favorite out of these five books. I originally predicted that it would be The Devil and the Dark Water in this spot, but obviously that ended up going in spot number three instead. So, in second place, I am putting Piranesi by Susanna Clark. I was apprehensive about this book, and I shouldn't have been because it was disorienting. It was strange, and I loved losing myself in the story. I loved letting go of all my expectations and my attempts to understand what was going on, and just letting this strange world explain itself to me. Piranesi is one of those books where it's not really about the characters so much as it's about the world and the ideas and the way it makes you think. And as I navigated this mysterious world with our protagonist, I did indeed do a lot of thinking about knowledge and the ways in which we acquire knowledge, humanity and its endless and often mindless search for knowledge, and what that never-ending pursuit does to us, which I felt was especially timely with all of the conversations people are having these days about artificial intelligence. And mostly, I thought about human existence and what value, if any, we derive from other people and constantly being around other people. And I also thought about the cycles we find ourselves trapped in as we focus on the minutiae of everyday life, as we tend to focus so much on our routines and all the things that we have to do every single day, and how those minutiae and those routines can make us lose sight of the bigger picture of existence itself and what meaning we want to derive from it. I don't think Piranesi is a book that will work for everyone, but you will know it's worked for you when you finish the book and you just sit there staring off into space as you battle an existential crisis. And for a book that isn't even 300 pages, I believe the edition I read is 245 pages, that's quite the accomplishment. Piranesi was incredible. It was a reading experience. I don't think I'll ever forget. And I apologize personally to Susanna Clark for underestimating her ability to blow me away with her writing abilities, and I hope she comes out with something soon so that I have something new to read by her. Having said all of that, it probably surprises you that I'm not giving Piranesi the number one spot on this list, but as much as I was wowed by Piranesi, I was even more impressed by the book that I am putting in the number one spot. And that book is The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. I took a gamble on this book that I knew nothing about and said in my prediction segment that it would be my favorite out of these five books. And what do you know? I was right. I feel like I need to begin by explaining what this book, The Essex Serpent, is and what it is not, because it is a book that is difficult to categorize or pin down. In my prediction segment, I called it historical fantasy because that was what I was told it was. But while it's definitely historical, it's not fantasy, although possibly you could call it fantasy adjacent, but even that feels like a bit of a stretch. At its core, The Essex Serpent is a historical fiction book set in Victorian England, featuring a cast of fundamentally incompatible people, and the plot is basically just the author setting these very different characters in motion and showing us all the big and little ways in which they both help each other and hurt each other in the most vivid and beautiful language. It's a 400 plus page character study that explores science and faith and family and all of the different kinds of love and all of the most difficult parts of being human. And it left me emotionally devastated because it ended in the one way I never thought it would end. But actually, looking back, it's the only way it could possibly have ended. And I cannot tell you how sad that makes me. The Essex Serpent made me want to laugh, but it more often made me want to cry. And most of all, it just made me so glad to be alive and to be human, and I could not ask for anything more out of a book. It's not even close. The Essex Serpent is absolutely, unquestionably, my favorite book out of these five books, and it is one of my favorite books that I have read so far this year. It's incredible, it's amazing, and I'm so glad I finally get to cross it off of my TBR. So, to recap, three out of my five predicted rankings were correct. I just had to switch around my predicted number two and number three rankings, and I think that shows that actually I do know my own reading taste pretty well. And I am not actually going to completely embarrass myself with this little reading experiment. This episode was a lot of fun to make, even if it did require a ton of reading. And if you guys would be interested in more of these types of reading experiment episodes in the future, please do feel free to let me know. I'm going to close out this episode with a quote from The Essex Serpent, partly because I have not been able to get this passage out of my head since I finished the book, and also because I'm hoping that you will be wowed enough by this quote to decide to pick up this book. It's morning now, and there's a heavy fog that brings a curious light into the room, and with it, the scent of the estuary. Sometimes I think I'll never escape that smell, as though I've already drowned in it. The fog is pressed so close against the window, I feel as if the whole house must have been blown up into a bank of cloud. Did I ever tell you about my parents' orchard? The trees were trained to grow in ordered rows against a kind of wooden structure. I remember thinking they'd been tortured out of their natural shape, and for two full summers, I wouldn't eat their fruit. I remember eating lunch there one afternoon. I must have been a child, because I can see my hair lying over my shoulders the way it was when I was young. And it must have been spring, because blossoms blew into our teacups and onto our plates, and I tried to make a wreath. We had a guest that day, whose name I've forgotten, one of my father's friends, and such a wrinkled, yellowish man. He looked like an apple himself, only one that got left in the dish, uneaten too long. He took a shine to me, seeing my head always in a book, and all afternoon came out with things to please me. How to say checkmate is to say Sanskrit and say the king is helpless, and how Nelson never got over his seasickness. What I remember most of all is this. He said, there are two words in the English language which are spelled the same and pronounced the same, but have opposite meanings. What are they? I couldn't find an answer, and of course that pleased him no end. He said, with the sort of flourish magicians have when pulling silk scarves from their sleeves, cleave. To cleave to something is to cling to it with all your heart, he said, but to cleave something apart is to break it up. All last night, that word came to me as clearly as if it had been you who'd told me only hours before. The memory got mixed up with the May blossoms falling, and the apples in the grass, and the conkers we found on the path, and the tear in the seam of your shirt. I've never found ways to explain to myself what it is that exists here in our letters, or when we sit together in warm rooms, or go walking out in the woods. And I am not sure it's necessary, not even now, when I still feel your imprint in me. But for now, that word's the best that I can do. We are cleaved together, we are cleaved apart. Everything that draws me to you is everything that drives me away. Again, that is from The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. Oh, by the way, I will say I had completely forgotten, but as much as I am encouraging people to read this book because I loved it so much, I will say it is very important to look up the trigger warnings if you do plan to read this book, because I was myself kind of surprised by how much intense discussion there was of certain sensitive topics. So definitely, I would love for you to read this book, but I don't want you to be triggered or hurt by it. So definitely please look up the trigger warnings before you do so. And that is going to be everything for this episode. This has been the 2 a.m. Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2 a.m. Until then, have a great week and happy book travels!